Final hour on this Tuesday. Next man up, 102.5. The Game, Jake Lyman, Christian Skelton with you. SEC Media Days rolling along. Vanderbilt going to speak later on this afternoon. We had Andrew Allegretta on earlier to talk about Vandy football. If you missed it, check it out on our podcast, anywhere you get your podcast. We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Right now, Alex Golish at the podium. His first year as Auburn's head coach. We'll get into him in a second. But Georgia spoke earlier today. Kirby Smart heading into his 11th season. We were talking about that before the show, Christian. It's crazy to think that Kirby Smart has been there for 11 years. But it's been a few years since they've been at the very top of college football. They were dominant for 3, 4, 5 years there. Won back-to-back national championships, including the blowout at TCU. But we had the conversation yesterday about the SEC not having the elite-level teams over the past few years that have been able to compete with the Big Ten when you get into the college football playoff. Georgia stands out as one of the two teams that I would look at that can make a run to a national championship. We've seen Kirby Smart do it before. They've got an experienced quarterback and obviously plenty of talent up and down that roster.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to pick a team to win the national championship in the SEC this year, I think the answer is pretty clear. It's Georgia because of those reasons you just listed off. I mean, I unfortunately saw firsthand how much of a stone cold killer Gunnar Stockton can be, because I was unfortunately in attendance for that Tennessee game and he just stuck me right in the chest. So that was fun. But I think Gunnar Stockton's the main reason why I have that confidence. Honestly, I have higher confidence in Gunnar Stockton than Arch Manning. That might be a hot take, but I think he's a better quarterback, personally.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could make an argument one way or the other. The Manning stuff, his name is obviously going to put him to the forefront a lot of those conversations. Like, I've made the point multiple times of why in these way too early 2027 mock drafts is Arch Manning the number one pick, when Dante Moore likely would have been the second overall pick this year if he came out. Like, I feel like that's more of a proven commodity. Arch Manning was very good down the stretch last year. The performance against A&M and into the bowl game, he had a very strong finish to the season. I think there's a lot of projection going on that he's going to take a big step this year. You've given him an elite wide receiver. He's got an elite tackle protecting his blind side. So, yeah, I like Arch Manning as a player. I think he's going to get better this year. But Gunnar Stockton has also played in those big moments, which Arch Manning hasn't. Like, Arch Manning didn't play in the SEC championship this year. He did not play in the playoffs each of the last 2 years. Gunnar Stockton did. And he's got a great running mate in the backfield with him in Nate Frazier. Of course, the defense is always loaded for Georgia. So I agree with you. Texas maybe is more talented. And when you just look at the key positions, they've got first-round picks left and right. But if you're asking me who I believe in when you get to the playoff, I'm going to take Kirby Smart and Gunnar Stockton over Steve Sarkisian and Arch Manning.
I couldn't agree more. And I mean, if those two teams were end up playing in Atlanta this year, who are you going to believe in more? Just because they've done it, and the last two times they've played, who's gotten the job done?
Yeah, I mean, it's just Steve Sarkisian, very good coach. And we've seen him at other spots have success, of course, as an offensive coordinator. Phenomenal offensive mind. But he hasn't coached in the playoff yet. Like, unless I'm at least as the head coach at Texas, yes.
I guess technically they made it in 23 and 24, right?
Oh, you're right. They lost to Washington.
They lost to Washington 23. I know that feels like it was like 20 years ago at this point, because that was the last 14 playoff. And then I guess technically they lost Ohio State in the semis in 24. But it's easy to forget those.
Man,
it's very easy to forget both of those. I feel like
I totally forgot that Quinn Ewers played in the playoff twice. Yeah. But now I'm thinking back and I remember both of those games vividly.
It was pretty forgettable.
I'm
going to
get clowned for that on the text line. Yeah.
And I guess the main game I remember of Quinn Ewers in the playoffs was the Arizona State game.
Yes.
In the quarterfinals. That was a great game.
Man,
I almost went to, and I'm very disappointed I didn't get to end up going to, but oh well.
The Washington one, I'm going to give myself a pass for forgetting about, because that one was,
like I said, that might as well be 20 years
ago. The 14 playoff feels like decades ago. But I cannot believe I forgot that they played in the semis 2 years ago, and they lost to Ohio State. Like, that was – Jack Sawyer had the pick in that game.
It was the scoop and score.
The scoop and score, yeah, at the very end. Yeah, that's my bad. I'll take accountability there. But Steve Sarkisian has not has not been able to win at the highest level, I guess, is still a valid point that Kirby Smart, we've seen him win back-to-back national championships and do it running away. And they played for a national championship the year Tua hit the home run ball for the touchdown in overtime. Kirby Smart's been there. He's done that. Gunnar Stockton has been in the biggest moments. Arch Manning hasn't played in those moments yet. So, yeah, if I'm picking a national champion from the SEC, I'm going to go with Georgia, although Texas definitely is talented enough to be in those conversations. For Georgia, it's just, I mean, it is just in the biggest moments, can they come through? They didn't come through last year against Ole Miss in the playoff, in the quarterfinal, even though they were playing their best football down the stretch last year. I mean, they completely stifled Alabama in the SEC championship game, but they came up short in the playoff. 2 years ago, who'd they lose to 2 years ago? I don't know why that playoff is escaping me.
Notre Dame, right?
You're right, yes. Yeah. They lost to Notre
also
Dame.
Also in the Sugar Bowl.
Yes, in the Sugar Bowl. So they haven't been able to get over the hump the last couple of years, but I think this is the year for Georgia and for the SEC where it's like, all right, you got to put up or you got to shut up. We said it yesterday. You can't keep sticking your chest out that you're the best conference out there if you're not going to come through in those big moments, and it feels like a lot of that's going to fall on the shoulders of Georgia.
Yeah, I think they're the ones that are going to have to get it done if anybody's going to do it. And, I mean, it's funny. I do have them – I know we haven't gotten to the schedule yet, but I do have them 11-1. And let's see if you can guess who the one loss I have is.
Yeah, let me look.
It's a team that they usually struggle with, and because of that, I'm just like, well, I don't think they're going to go 12-0 because I don't think anybody's really going to go 12-0 anymore. So I was like, okay, yeah, that's the one loss. That would make the most sense.
The Tennessee State game going to be tough.
Yeah, that will be tough.
Week one in Athens. They got TSU, Western Kentucky, Arkansas, Oklahoma. Is it at Alabama?
Yeah.
Like, that's the one that makes sense.
I don't even think Alabama's going to be that great this year, but that is the one that definitely makes the most sense.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you that their 12-0 teams are just rare, but looking at this schedule, that's the only one that would even scare me in the slightest this year.
At Ole Miss is going to be tough, obviously. As
yeah,
well.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to let themselves lose to Ole Miss twice.
Right.
In the span of
there's some get back there that they want. Texter 2459 says upset of the year: South Carolina beats Georgia and Columbia this year.
I had that one in a prior schedule thing I did like 2 months ago, but I've changed a lot now since. But yeah, I thought about doing it for sure.
Georgia has had a couple of surprises the last few years where they lose a game, or maybe not even lose a game, but there's a game that shouldn't be close that is. Last year, they scored 17 against Georgia, 16 against Georgia Tech. So they only won that one by 7.
Is that game on Black Friday?
Yes.
That's why. Yeah. I really don't remember anything about that game.
The Florida game last year.
Yeah.
And, like, Florida, that game, we talk about the Red River Shootout with Oklahoma and Texas. Like, you just never really know in that game. Georgia's always the better team, it seems like, the last decade. But you just never know if they're going to be able to pull that one off. That one is in Atlanta this year, I believe.
So stupid. They should just play it on campus. One thing I will say, I think if you flipped where because South Carolina is at the very end of the year,
yeah,
second to last year. If you flipped that game with Arkansas, which is their SEC opener, I think I'd pick South Carolina.
I agree.
But since it's later in the year, I think they'll be fine.
I agree with that, especially with the way they open their season against Tennessee State and Western Kentucky. It's like you're not really getting tested at all early on in the season.
I think that's what helped Tennessee last year. That it was the same thing last year.
Yeah, it was like, all right, who have they played? And They came in and Tennessee punched him in the mouth, and it took all the way down to the wire for them to actually pull off the win. I just don't see Arkansas being talented enough to hang in there with Georgia. But yeah, you're right. If that was South Carolina, I think I would look at that and say that one could be a trap game for Georgia. At the end of the year, though, I'm still going to pick Georgia. I'm with you. I'll go 11-1. I'll say the loss is Alabama too, just because it's tough to go win in Tuscaloosa. But would it shock me if Georgia went undefeated and ran the table? Probably not.
I think if anybody's going to do it, it's Georgia for sure. I mean, they have a 12-0 schedule, 100%.
Yep, I agree with you. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. You can text or call. Our phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We'll continue to react to SEC Media Days, talk about some of the other teams we will see, including the South Carolina Gamecocks, who I have let it be known, they are my sleeper in the SEC this year. I think there's too much talent for them to be bad again. And if they're bad again, that means the end of the Shane Beamer era in Columbia. 615-737-1025. Our phone and text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Jake Lyman, Christian Skelton, next man up, 1025 The Game. Next man up, 1025 The Game. Jake Lyman, Christian Skelton. Got a few more segments with you on this Tuesday. SEC Media Days continuing down in Tampa. Vanderbilt getting set to take center stage this afternoon along with South Carolina. We'll talk about the Gamecocks in just a minute, but let's get into Auburn here. Alex Golish taking over, coming over from USF, where they had a very successful season last year. He brings over Byron Brown. Early on in the year, USF looked like they might be the shoe-in to get the Group of Five bid to the college football playoff, and it didn't end the way that they would have hoped it would. It kind of got into a 3 or 4 team race in the American to get that last spot, with Tulane eventually coming out on top. But he goes to Auburn, and the quote that's made its way around today is he said he doesn't have any goals for his first season except for building the foundation of what football is going to look like for years to come. And for Auburn, the schedule isn't completely horrible. There's one stretch at the end of October where they go at Georgia, LSU at home, at Ole Miss, which I don't think that's going to go very well.
Kneeling the week before that.
Yeah, they do Tennessee October 3rd, too. So October is probably going to be a tough month for them. But they get home games against teams that it wouldn't be shocking for them to beat. Florida. Vanderbilt and Auburn was a great game last year here in Nashville that went to overtime. You get Arkansas at home, on the road at Mississippi State. So you've got some games in there that are winnable, but for Auburn, I think they're probably going to be bottom half of the SEC this year under Alex Golish. There's still a lot of work to do when it comes to building up that team.
I think they can be bottom half but still be encouraging.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I think you can still see some signs of improvement. You know, hey, I don't know if they're going to beat one of those teams in October, but I mean, even if you – I think the most likely one's probably LSU, honestly, just because
it's at
Auburn. Yeah, it's
at home, yeah.
And I think it's the most realistic anyway, just of those teams. I mean, who knows? Ole Miss could end up being terrible out of nowhere, but I think LSU's the most likely one out of there. And I mean, if you beat LSU and you still end up like 7-5 and 8-4, I think that'd be a great year one for Golish.
Yeah, I would agree with that. If they – I mean, a bowl game for Auburn. They went 5-7 last year. They were 1-7 in the SEC. I think just showing improvement from Hugh Freeze and, you know, it was DJ Durkin at the end of last year who took over as the interim head coach. So, like, I think just seeing improvement in year one under Alex Golish would be big. They played Baylor again at the beginning of the year. They beat them on the road last year down in Waco. This one is at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta. It's the Aflac kickoff game. So let's say they beat Baylor, they beat Southern Miss, they beat Samford. Those are their three non-conference games. To get to a bowl game, you got to go 3-6 in the SEC. I think it's realistic.
It's doable for sure.
Yeah, for Auburn. I don't know a ton about Golish. I know he was with Tennessee and he was the offensive coordinator and had some success here, and you know, early on it looked like he was going to possibly take South Florida to the college football playoff last year, but again, out of the, it was what, 6 hires in the SEC, I would say he was one of the least inspiring ones for me.
Really?
Yeah, like I like the Summerall hire at Florida a little bit better. Kiffin, I think you put into its own tier at
that
LSU.
Doesn't count. You're hiring from another SEC school. Yeah.
I would say I like the Golish hire probably better than Silverfield.
Definitely, for sure.
The Pete Golding one's just, it's that one's interesting too. I don't know how you compare that to others.
I put that one in with Kiffin as well. I think I would probably put Golish ahead of Silverfield, and then I'm trying to think of who else.
I think
hired.
I would go Stein over Golish too. I like the Will Stein. So I would say out of the hires, I'd say it was 5 out of 6 for me. I think it's a better hire than Silverfield.
That's probably where I'd go too.
But I do like what I think Summerall was kind of the prize to be had among Group of Five coaches this offseason.
Kentucky alum.
Yeah, yeah. Which. Kentucky, I like Will Stein. I think Will Stein was probably the prize to be had when it comes to Power Four coordinators this year. So I think those were really good hires. And then again, Kiffin was kind of a whole different thing, leaving a playoff team to go coach at LSU. Golding its own kind of thing because they just promoted him from within. But I would say, yeah, Golish, I like the hire, but doesn't inspire me to think Auburn is just immediately going to get back to being a top 25 team year in and year out. I think there's still some work to do there.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I've got him at 7-5, and I don't really have him beating anybody. I have him losing all those games in October and then losing to Alabama and then winning everything else. So I don't think that'd be a terrible year one for Golish. I mean, you wouldn't really beat anybody too impressive,
yeah,
unfortunately. But still, get back to the postseason, get those extra practices. Just it's going to take some time, but I think – if he does it the right way, he'll be a. I think he's got plenty of examples of what not to do at Auburn now.
Yeah,
so
that
that's
is
the
true.
Good news.
Auburn has had some bad hires over the last few years. So Golish, I think, is going to get a pretty long leash to try and figure this out. I think Auburn realizes that they tried to take the fast track with Hugh Freeze and see if he could recreate his success back in the SEC, and it didn't work out. I think Golish is going to get some runway to try and fix this program. But Vandy and Tennessee both play Auburn, actually, in back-to-back weeks. So it'll be intriguing to see what the early season looks like for the Tigers. Again, it's Baylor, Southern Miss, Florida to start the season before they play Vandy and Tennessee. We'll see. Those I would pick both of the local teams to win those ones. Let's get to South Carolina here, because I've said it, this is my dark horse. I think they are too talented to be as bad as they were last year, going 4-8. And there was a lot of talk about them being a dark horse playoff team, being a team that could take a step after winning 9 games back in 2024. And they took a serious step back. The schedule is moderately favorable for them this year. Now, there are some tough games in there, as there are on every SEC schedule, but you start with Mississippi State in conference play. You get Kentucky at home early on. You go to Florida, which not easy, but you go to Florida. You get Arkansas on the road towards the end of the season. Now, the last 2 weeks are going to be brutal. You're facing Georgia. You're facing Clemson. So this is a team that maybe is 7-3 at that point and could lose the last two. But I do like South Carolina. They've got the quarterback. They've got an elite pass rusher. They've got speed on the outside in terms of weapons. So if I'm picking a dark horse in the SEC, I think it's going to be South Carolina this season.
I would have to agree. I mean, I've got them at 8-4, and I have them, you know, winning one game they're not supposed to. I haven't beating Texas A&M. I don't think that's a crazy stretch at all, just because we've seen how South Carolina, they should have beaten Texas A&M last year. 31-3 comeback was insane. You know, they should have won last year.
Yeah, the tail end of this schedule for South Carolina is not easy. Early on, I think it's realistic they could be 5-1 heading into the Tennessee game, but at Oklahoma, home against Texas A&M, Georgia at home, and then at Clemson to end the season. Although, who knows what that Clemson squad is going to look like by the end of the year with Dabo Sweeney, and there's been some struggles. Michael in Madison says, Beamer is too much of a bozo for them to actually accomplish anything. See, I maybe it's my Virginia Tech roots. I like Shane Beamer.
I go back and
I know
forth.
He's goofy. He is goofy, but I do like Shane Beamer. I think that there are redeeming qualities there. I'm rooting for him to try and save his job, but they have to take a big step forward. You've got a guy who's being talked about as a possible first-round pick at quarterback. You've got Dylan Stewart. You're paying all this money for this roster. You've got to go and make it all worthwhile. You've got to go get wins, and I think 8 would probably be viewed as a success for South Carolina this year, but I think you at the very least have to be bowl eligible.
Yeah.
Minimum.
You got to be bowl eligible at least. I think they'll do that without any problems, just because this schedule sets up pretty well. I mean, you got to go to Alabama. You chalk that up as a loss, obviously. But I mean, other than that, I haven't beaten Tennessee too. I forgot to say that. I said that yesterday.
Yeah,
I have way too much scar tissue with that stadium. It's just like Fayetteville. I can't see Tennessee.
Yeah, that the 2023 game was.
Yeah, 2022.
Brutal. Oh, sorry, 2022.
And, 2018, they lost there. 2016, they lost there. The one time they've beaten South Carolina in Williams-Brice the last few years was during COVID, and I don't even count that.
Yeah, so. you got to give South Carolina fans credit. No matter what that team looks like, they show out for their Gamecocks at Willie B. So that'll be an interesting game later on in the season. 615-737-1025. We see you on the phone lines. We will get to you coming up next. We got a couple more segments here on this Tuesday. Jake Lyman, Christian Skelton, next man up, 1025 The Game. Next man up, 1025 The Game. Jake Lyman, Christian Skelton with you. 30 minutes left on the show. Well-known South Carolina fan, Darius Rucker. I don't know if you did that on purpose there.
Oh, yes. It was definitely on purpose.
All right, good. I was making sure. I was like, man, if this wasn't on purpose, it's just a big coincidence as we're talking about the Gamecocks here. Let's go to our phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Todd has called in. Todd, thanks for calling. Good morning.
Hey, guys. Good morning. Great job on the show today. Love the conversation. I got three takes. First of all, this one's kind of personal. South Carolina, I'm a little bit of a fan of Beamer Ball, and I'd love to see them be a little bit successful, but more of a personal note. They picked up a kicker from the transfer portal who's from Middle Tennessee, Bellinfont from Stewart Creek High School.
Wow.
And an intriguing opportunity there. Maybe it comes down to a last kick down there in Tuscaloosa. I'd love to see Bellinfont get the win over Alabama since he walked on there. But that's going to be an uphill battle for sure. But a great kid, except for him. Vandy, man, you know, they had the Napoleon Bonaparte and Diego Pavia. And so I just don't know that Clark Lee's got somebody that's going to be that personality like Pavia that's going to be able to, you know, get everybody to that place where they can, you know, be like they were under Diego. And then the last one, man, for some reason, gut feeling, maybe they're distracted by Indiana, but I think Texas gets the win over Ohio State to start the year. And I'll hang up and listen to you guys.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Todd. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Coach Harris.
Yeah, that was I like all three takes there. South Carolina. It is funny. You see Middle Tennessee talent spreading out more across the country. It's like there are guys everywhere who come from this region.
Yeah, it's all over the place. I love it. I mean, the high school football has just increased massively.
Right.
Like
this
talent.
It's become
recently
a hotbed around here for good high school football talent. South Carolina, again, it's just like I feel like there's too much talent on that team not to be good. They're talking about Lenora Sellers on SEC Network right now. For Vanderbilt, I do understand what Todd is saying there of – Diego Pavia was such an extension of Clark Lee in the locker room and could really push the message and get everybody on the same page. Maybe Jared Curtis is that. Maybe it has to be somebody else. I don't know. But that is an important part. And Andrew said the same thing when we had him earlier, that it's not just what you do and where you come from and your star rating. It's how you connect with that locker room, and can you get guys to play for you? I'm interested to see what that looks like. And I agree. I think Texas beats Ohio State.
I agree, too. Yeah, I think they get it done.
In Austin, I think they win that game.
Yeah, that place will be rocking.
Let's go back to the phone lines. Lloyd has called in. Lloyd, thanks for calling. Good morning. Hello, Lloyd.
Hey, guys. How we doing?
Good. How are you?
Doing fine. Good show. I'm enjoying it. A couple comments. Noticed Heupel yesterday was pretty salty over that 2021 Ole Miss game. I think that still sticks with him. That probably should have been a Tennessee win. If you remember, they took a touchdown off the board on a defensive score.
Yep.
That was pretty controversial.
The way he handled that I thought was good. He kept it pretty light, and somebody approached Heupel yesterday after and was like, is there more to that? And he was like, no, I was just joking around. But
well, the best part is he just said it with a stone cold face.
Right.
Just no smile whatsoever. He looked extremely serious about it.
No, but I think you're right, Lloyd, that like the Lane Kiffin experience this year, he is going to be the villain in almost every single stadium he walks into.
Yeah, I can't think of a staff and a program that I want to see fail the way that I do with LSU. Guys on Heupel, does it look like he's lost a little weight?
Yeah, maybe. We were watching him walk into Tampa yesterday, walk into the hotel room, and he's definitely not like the most fashionable coach.
I believe,
but
the term I used was auraless.
Yes,
unfortunately. But you know, hey, he maybe slimmed down
a
little bit.
Yeah,
hopefully
might have trimmed a few pounds off.
Let's hope.
Well, that'd be a sign of good things if the team could piggyback some of the discipline and maybe stop getting so many penalties per game. I really think that's held UT back, especially, you know, last season. The season sort of spiraled. Do you think, Christian, do you think Deshaun Bishop kind of capitalized on his 1,000-yard season? I mean, he's, you know, second year in a row being the man. I guess Dwan Morris will probably get a lot of carries too. But where do you see the running game ending up there with Tennessee?
I mean, Deshaun Bishop's definitely your RB1 for sure. I mean, I saw – it was about a month ago or so, but I think it was ESPN that did it. They had most likely player from pretty much every team in the country to be an award winner, like, for their position. They had Deshaun Bishop, Doak Walker. And I could definitely see him – I don't know if he's going to win it, but I could see him being a finalist at the end of the year for sure. I mean, Tennessee runs the ball. People forget that, but that's, like, the main part of the offense is running the football. So I think he's going to be a big focal point of the offense.
No, I think he might be their best player. And you mentioned Dwan Morris, too. I saw him play down at Oakland. I mean, that is a very talented young player. So I think the running back room is going to be a pretty big strength for this Tennessee team. Loy, we appreciate you calling in.
Keep it up, guys. Thanks.
615-737-1025 is the phone number if you want to text or call. I love that Lloyd says Josh Heupel losing some pounds could lead to more discipline from Tennessee.
Let's hope. I was going to say give all the food Heupel wants to eat and just give it to McIntyre. You know, he needs the pounds.
That's true.
Kind of like me. He's a skinny guy like me. Just give all Heupel's food to McIntyre.
Maybe that's what it is. Maybe Josh Heupel has been dieting and they've been giving his extra food to George McIntyre.
I mean, I think he's still like 207, I think, was the listed weight I heard the other day. So it's still, I mean, it's definitely better than he was, but it's still pretty skinny.
Yeah, I know. Heading into the spring, Parker and I had the conversation about Faison Brandon versus George McIntyre and, like, where do they need to improve to win the starting quarterback job? And for Faison Brandon, I think a lot of it was, all right, he's got to get caught up on the system. He has not been in this offense for a full year like George McIntyre has. He needs that time to get into the playbook and learn the way Josh Heupel likes his offense run. For George McIntyre, a lot of the issues were physical. Is his body going to be able to hold up playing an SEC schedule? And I think the reason Faison Brandon has turned into the favorite in this quarterback competition is because you've seen him develop more on the mental side of the game than George McIntyre has developed on the physical side of the game.
Yeah, and I think that's, like you said, that's the two areas they both needed to improve. I think Faison has taken a bigger leap than McIntyre. Now, you never know. And here's the thing nobody's thinking about. Tennessee could still end up needing both of them. The guy that ends up winning the job could end up getting hurt. We saw that in 21. You know, Joe Milton won the job originally over Hendon Hooker, and then he got hurt in the Pittsburgh game. Hooker took the reins and never looked back. And then obviously Milton came back later. But you just never know what could happen with these things. It's crazy to think that Hendon Hooker could have never had the Heisman caliber season he had in 2022 if Joe Milton never gets hurt in that Pittsburgh game.
Right. You just never know. And sometimes it's, you know, the practice and fall camp is different than what it looks like when you actually start playing football. And I think that was kind of what Joe Milton in shorts and a t-shirt. There may not be a quarterback who looks better than him. He's big, he's fast, he's got a rocket for an arm. And I can see how going through fall camp, like Hendon Hooker, he was fast and he was accurate, but it's not quite as flashy. But it's like when you get into the game and the live bullets start flying, Hendon Hooker just knew exactly where the ball needed to go, and he was able to deliver in that Heupel offense. Unlike Joe Milton was fine the full year he was a starter, but clearly wasn't as crisp and as efficient as Hendon Hooker was. Sometimes you just don't know until you see those guys start playing actual football.
Yeah, and it's funny. Like Hendon Hooker and Josh Dobbs both, I'm pretty sure I've heard, terrible practice players. It just is what it is. But, I mean, both of them at different times in their college careers, I mean, the NFL is a different story. I mean, Josh has made a pretty good NFL career for himself.
Yeah,
Hendon's kind of struggling. But, you know, both of them, whenever the lights came on, they both turned it on. And it's just always been interesting to me how that ends up happening. Because it's like you'd think if you're playing the same sport, why doesn't it just translate over to the practice field? And I guess it's just some guys – they got to have the pressure on them, I guess. I don't know what else to say about it.
Yeah, sometimes it's just the lights come on and things click for these guys. And that's why, as excited as we are for training camp, I also am kind of dreading it because we get so locked in on every single rep that we see. And it's like, oh, on this the August 4th practice, what was Cam Ward thinking here? And it's like, this is a disaster. And it's like, in week two, are we really going to be remembering what happened in these training camp practices? It's like, I get it. It's what we have to talk about at that moment. And we get so excited for training camp where you've got real like reps to talk about every day. But it is funny. It's like some of these guys just aren't very good practice players. And you just don't know what you're going to see until they actually hit the football field.
Yeah, I guess, would we say Cam Ward is a good practice player? Jury's still out?
What is our take there? I don't know. Based on the kind of the reports from OTAs, I would say maybe he's not a very good practice player.
Hey, you know what? That's not the end of the world. If he ends up just being an elite quarterback, who cares? Who cares how good he's in practice?
No, it is just funny because it's like we look forward to training camp, and we're like counting down the days to training camp. And by the middle of training camp, I'm sure I will be counting down the days of – God, can we please stop talking about practice and start playing real football? But it'll be here before we know it, and both local schools in the SEC have a lot to figure out before their opening game on September 5th. Who's going to start under center? George McIntyre, Faison Brandon for Tennessee, Jared Curtis, Blaze Berlewitz, and so on and so forth for Vanderbilt. So lots of questions to be answered. Vanderbilt going to take the podium soon, and I'm sure that Clark Lee will be asked about his quarterback situation coming up within the next hour or so. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. We've got one more segment left on this Tuesday. We'll wrap up the show after this. Jake Lyman, Christian Skelton, next man up, 1025 The Game. Next man up, 1025 The Game. Jake Lyman, Christian Skelton, wrapping up the show on this Tuesday. Chasing Big Joe coming up after us. Corey Curtis going to join us for the full show tomorrow. Got lots to get into with Corey from SEC Media Days, getting ready for Titans training camp. So excited for that. I did want to look at this article from ESPN that I saw this morning, Christian. It's kind of a strange format. Bill Connolly put this out. College football ifs list. How national title contenders can come together. I'm not really as interested in what the ifs are, but he kind of groups national title contenders into different tiers. He's got 9 teams in the top tier. We had said 6 teams could win the national title. We were thinking in conferences yesterday. I forgot to add Notre Dame in there. I would add Notre Dame as number 7.
Yes, Notre Dame. Yeah, that join a conference you won't be forgotten about, but whatever.
Yes. But the other 2 teams that are in this tier that we didn't bring up yesterday, LSU and Texas Tech, which I would agree that they're probably the next grouping beyond those 7, which those 7 Georgia, Texas, Oregon, Ohio State, Indiana, Miami, Notre Dame. I think those are the 7 teams I look at and say they've got a legitimate shot to go win a national title. LSU, we said it yesterday, talented enough to win a national title for sure. But it's a wait and see mode for me because you see it all the time. These teams that are built primarily through the transfer portal, sometimes it doesn't click. And Lane Kiffin has not been able to get over the hump no matter where he's gone and go win the big one. So I'm in a wait and see mode there. Texas Tech, I think I would have added to that conversation had they not lost Brennan Sorsby. But I agree. Those are probably the next 2 teams beyond the 7 that we listed.
See, it's interesting for Texas Tech with me because I'm like, obviously Brennan Sorsby's would have been an upgrade over what they've got now post, you know, gambling scandal and everything.
Yeah.
But I'm like, does he really affect them that much, good or bad, either way? Because I'm like, I looked at what he did last year. I was like, okay, he was a solid quarterback, but I didn't think he, like, set the world on fire like a lot of people did. I don't know. That's just my opinion. I'm like, if Texas Tech was going to be good, I still think they'll be pretty solid without him. If they were going to be bad, I still think they would have been bad without him.
I think they're going to be the same team they were last year. They're going to be a team with a really good defense.
Because all they didn't have last year was basically a quarterback, right?
Right, yeah. Because Baron Morton got into that game against Oregon and couldn't do anything against a legitimate defense. And I feel like Will Hammond, you're going to get probably very similar results this year. Sorsby, it's not like he was a world beater at Cincinnati, but he was an upgrade for sure at quarterback. And I think it would at least have made Texas Tech think they could play with the top teams in the Big Ten and the SEC. I think they're the same team that they were last year. The next tier, 3 teams, Texas A&M, Ole Miss, and Oklahoma, all SEC teams. I would agree. That's probably the grouping of SEC teams that are good enough to make the playoff, but not good enough to actually make a run.
I think I'll probably have all 3 of those teams either going 10-2 or 9-3. So that's completely fair. They're all comparable to me, for sure.
You could probably put Alabama in there, too.
I would agree.
But I wanted to get to the end of this list, which are kind of like your long shots. There are five teams that Bill Connelly lists here as national championship long shots. USC. I think USC is interesting because Maiava is good. They do lose some pass catchers from last year with Jacoby Lane and Mekhi Lemon. Is Lincoln Riley's offensive genius going to shine through, and can they actually get into the playoff? They've been close a couple of times, but haven't been able to do it, at least since he's been at USC. They've got Gary Patterson now as their defensive coordinator. USC is interesting to me. I don't think I would put them up in that top tier of the Big Ten, but they're one of those sneaky teams that I think you need to keep an eye out for.
Yeah, Maiava, I can't really get a read on. I don't know. I probably did not watch a single USC game last year, now that I think about it. Maybe when they played Oregon late in the year. But yeah, I can't get a read on him whether I think he's truly one of those elite quarterbacks a lot of people are saying that they think he is.
Michigan is also listed here.
Okay.
Which, Bryce Underwood, if he takes a pretty big leap from year one to year two, I think it's not completely out of the question. But I just also, Whittingham was great at Utah. Is he going to be able to do it at a higher profile program,
right,
like Michigan? Then Tennessee is listed, which, if they have the quarterback, like it's not national championship, but if they have the quarterback, right, I think playoff could be in the cards.
Oh, I agree for sure. I mean, it's a freshman quarterback. It's probably not going to happen, but it's not the most unrealistic thing in the world to think about, just because like we talked about yesterday, the weapons, whoever it is, it's probably going to be Faison, but the weapons that they'll have around them, you can't do much better of a situation you're getting thrown into in your freshman year. I mean, the wide receivers are great, running backs great, O-line's great. I mean, like I said, if the quarterback was better, like if Tennessee got Leavitt or Tennessee got
right,
it's kind of funny. They kind of dodged a bullet not getting
Sorsby.
Because
Sorsby
was definitely a possibility.
Right, because wasn't his girlfriend played at Tennessee?
Something, I think she ended up transferring,
and then
too.
She transferred to Texas Tech, which was everybody kind of pointed to as, oh, that's where he's headed. Yeah, might have dodged a bullet there. And then the last two teams listed, BYU and Missouri.
I don't see it with
Missouri. if we're going just full-on long shots, sure. I probably wouldn't have put Indiana in the grouping last year preseason of like teams I think can win the national title. But I really do think it comes down to seven, maybe eight teams.
Yeah.
Like LSU is the maybe for me, but I think those top seven teams are kind of a tier above everybody else.
I think I would have put Indiana last year in the tier this year that like Ole Miss, Texas A&M, Oklahoma
right
are in. Like
possible
not,
playoff
not
team.
Not completely impossible, but probably not, you know?
Right. So you just never know. In college football, teams can take big steps from year to year, especially with the transfer portal. But I do think that those seven teams, Georgia, Texas, Oregon, Ohio State, Indiana, Miami, Notre Dame, like those are the seven teams I look at and say, those are national championship caliber squads. They could go all the way this year. Anybody else I think would be a surprise, but that's why we love college football. You just never know what's going to happen.
You never know. Any given Saturday.
Any given Saturday. I still haven't heard whether they're coming out with a second season on Netflix.
Yeah,
I would assume
like
it's a no at this
I was thinking
point,
about
right?
that the other day because like I don't know if we had a trailer at this point last year, but we at least knew it was coming. Well, I feel like we would have known by now.
They screened the first episode at SEC Media Days last year for
okay
media. Like you could go in and watch it on, I think it was like Tuesday or Wednesday
okay
night.
And you were there last year, right?
I was there
right
for Vandy when it was in Atlanta. So yeah, hopefully we get a second season of that, but I haven't seen any announcements.
Yeah, me neither, unfortunately. I loved that show. I thought it was great.
Christian, appreciate you filling in again today.
Yes,
we'll do
sir
it again tomorrow.
Appreciate the opportunity again.
With Corey Curtis in with us. Big thanks to Julian Minnensohn, as well as Andrew Allegretta for joining us. And live in studio, Dalen Swearingen from PBR as we get ready for Stampede Days in August. That does it for us. Chase and Big Joe coming up next here on 102.5 The Game.